Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios. Presented to you by your local Hyundai dealers. You're listening to Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. An Odyssey station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. The
Score! This hour is brought to you by Menards. Save big money at Menards.
I have an iPad and four different screens. I don't even know where to look for the screen.
Steve Stone.
We're here, which is great.
White Sox TV analyst.
The glass is mostly full.
How do you keep your glass?
Mostly full. A rosy outlook. A positive bias.
Sorry, I'm floored. I've run out of words.
Former Cy Young Award winner.
He's my all-time favorite White Sox player.
I was a member of the Southside Hitmen in 1977, one of the most exciting White Sox teams in history.
Steve Stone.
This is voting on the best things in the world. Just things that we love, things that are great. And the 15 seed in the producer's region is passive-aggressive Steve Stone.
You take a look at what he did last year. It wasn't overly impressive.
Now I got something for you, big boy.
Just know that that particular version of you is a favorite of our producers.
It's hard to really sit a guy who went 5-for-5.
Some managers don't think so.
Well, that will happen on occasion. It has happened in Sox history, but we won't get into that.
Just to be nominated is an honor. You don't have to win. Isn't that what people say? You know, you don't have to win anything. Just to be nominated is a great honor.
Dip your toe there a little bit.
All right, Stone Pony, thank you very much. Breaking down the game of baseball for more than 3.5 decades.
There's 30 teams out there that could use a guy's expertise like that.
Steve Stone with Bernstein and Rahimi.
Where did your meme go? Oh, I don't know. He just dissolved.
Starts now.
Poof.
Big day for the White Sox. Perfect time to talk to Steve Stone, who is on Twitter at Steve Stone, the White Sox analyst at NBC Sports Chicago, joins us on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. Well, Stoney, the lineup is out. I don't quibble with it. I think the lineup makes sense. We're just trying to figure out how they came to the decision to start Carlos Rodon. What is informing this decision? What do you know about how they got here?
Well, I think it was a fairly easy decision for a couple of different reasons. Number one, Carlos has thrown pretty well against Houston, and that's always a plus. Number two, Lance Lynn has not thrown particularly well against Houston, and that is always factored into the decision. But I think Carlos has been so good this year that you take a look at his body of work and say, you know what? He's got all the incentive in the world for this one particular game. It's all going to come down to this one particular game as far as he's going to be viewed heading into the postseason, heading into free agency, trying to establish the fact that that arm is in fact healthy. And will he be throwing 99 again? I tend to doubt it, but I do believe he's going to find another couple miles an hour because I think the adrenaline is going to be pumping. The only thing that concerns me is command of the slider. If he has command of the slider, if that slider is even close to what it was during this season, I think he's going to be fine. And I think he probably learned a little bit in that last start against Cincinnati. He learned that without his great stuff, and he certainly didn't have that, he was able to move the ball around, pitch a little bit, and I get it. Cincinnati is not Houston as far as the lineup is concerned. They're still major league hitters. He still got the job done. He gave up one hit in 5 innings, and so I think the Sox are going back, seeing what he did head-to-head with the various hitters he's going to face today, and saying it's worth a shot. And then for me, and this is putting the cart before the horse, but for me it's Giolito in Game 5 if you can get back to Houston. And I think there's a couple of things that stand in the way, certainly, but you know, if we could have bargained for Game 4 just a couple of days ago, we'd have been in pretty good shape, and that's exactly what we have.
Yeah, Stoney, I've appreciated your level of calm through all of this, especially the first two games when you were saying, you know, the key here is to only get one of the two on the road, and then you're in a much better spot. And as a former pitcher, regarding Carlos Rodon, who you've seen not be the guy that he was at the beginning of the season, when you know you don't have your best speed or your best stuff on the mound and you're trying to make adjustments, what would you do if you were him? You talked about the slider. I know we're going to see a heavy diet of that. But what else might we see in a guy who knows that he's going to be out there, he's given the ball, but it's not going to be the same pitch selection we saw earlier?
Well, I'm going to assume that the temperatures are not going to be blisteringly hot in Chicago today. And so with temperatures being down a little bit, I'm thinking that you can get away with a few more fly balls, which for me would mean I'm going to show them, especially early in the game, I'm going to show them that straight change a couple of times. I'm going to give them something else to think about. I'm going to give them that third pitch to factor into the equation. This is a very smart hitting Houston team. They make contact. They put the ball in play. They always have. They take a lot of pitches, so you're going to have to throw strikes. I think you have to be as aggressive as you possibly can, and it sounds counterintuitive to be aggressive with a team that makes a lot of contact, but that's the way you have to do it, because the one thing you don't want to do is you don't want to get into that 80 to 90 pitch mark and you're still in the fourth inning. I think you want to go as far as you can. There's no doubt Tony's going to have a very quick hook if things don't work out. We saw it with Dylan Cease, who right now has very good stuff. He just didn't have command. And that really had been the case heading into the first 2.5 games, was lack of command, putting too many guys on base. With a good hitting ball club, Houston is that, you can't walk anybody. So for Carlos Rodon, I mix in the straight change. I give him three different pitches to think about. I also throw two different sliders, and I think he's going to do that a little bit more today. He's going to throw early in the count that get-me-over slider, because nobody wants to hit anything spinning early. They want to take that pitch. Houston takes a whole lot of pitches early and works counts. So if you can throw that get-me-over slider early, you can use that wipeout slider later in the at-bat. And I think if he can bury that down and into the right-handers, he's going to be in good shape. The key is that only works when you're ahead of the hitter. And so everything works on being aggressive early in the count, throwing a lot of strikes, and mixing some pitches to give these guys something to think about.
That's really interesting, Stoney, especially in light of what used to be the way starting pitchers talked about their day. And setting up, understanding it was likely you would go three times through an order at a minimum. And, you know, Oral Hershiser talked about it too. It's like, I'm going to hold something back. I am going to make sure that the third at bat, he's looking at something he hasn't seen before. And that's the chess match of building out your start. That's completely by the boards in an average MLB game now, when you're maybe getting two times through the order. And especially today, when you're saying, you know, talk about a kitchen sink kind of thing, where just get 27 outs, find some way to get that next guy out. The philosophy is completely different than for a regular start.
Well, I think you're seeing, in the way Tony used the bullpen in Game 3, you're seeing the prototypical way that the Sox feel they want to play a baseball game. They didn't expect to not get out of the second inning with Dylan Cease. That being said, the back end of the game was set up perfectly, exactly how it was drawn up by both Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams, and used by Tony La Russa and Ethan Katz. If you get to that point, there is no doubt the Sox have the advantage over Houston. The key is getting to that point. But this is as hard as you can, as long as you can. Give me everything you've got, and a lot of incentive for Carlos Rodon. And the biggest incentive is that he realizes that if it's not going to be the White Sox next year, it's going to be somebody else. He's got Scott Boras as an agent. But he's got to show other teams, as well as the White Sox, with this performance today and hopefully more performances in the postseason, he's going to show them that that arm is healthy. It might be tired, but it's healthy. He's not going to have 99. And you say how you differ? During the season, there were times when Carlos went out there and said, okay, here's the four-seamer. I've got you where I want you. I'm going to throw you a face-high fastball. I'm going to throw it by you, and there's nothing you can do about it. And boom, he threw it. It was there. It exploded. See you later, on to the next hitter. Then he would say, okay, now I got you looking at that high fastball. I'm going to throw that wipeout slider down and in, back foot, through it. It's an enchanted night. It's there. He had some nights where literally there was no team on earth who could hit him. And so hopefully hopefully that will be a modified Carlos tonight. He's not going to have that big stuff that he had, but he's shown himself he can pitch without that. And understand something. You know what? Everybody keeps saying, well, you know, the White Sox didn't play well against these good teams. They couldn't beat the good teams. They didn't play well against the good teams. You've heard that a few times, I'm sure. But if you take a look at comparisons in every different category, the White Sox have played the Red Sox better than Houston has played the Red Sox. Mm-hmm. They've scored more runs. They've given up less runs. They have a higher on-base percentage. They have a much better ERA. They do everything much better against the Red Sox than Houston does. Well, right now, Houston's not worried about that. The Sox are not worried about that. But the Sox would love to have home field advantage. To do that, they've got to win two more games. That's all it is. It's down to a two-game series. Win them both and you move on. You lose one, you go home.
Before we move on to other things, do you know if, as they talk about Rodon and say, well, he it looked better to me, or he says he feels better, they have every measurement tool possible. Have they gotten him, has any of this throwing been in pitch lab where they can actually see not just velocity, but spin and movement and everything they can measure now and compare and contrast what he is now with actual measurement data as opposed to what he was, so they know what the pitches are doing?
Well, there's a couple of things that come into play. Number one, we're not privy to any of that information, as you would expect. I don't travel with a Rapsodo in my briefcase, so I can't quantify spin when I'm watching a guy work.
Is that a Rapsodo in your briefcase, or you're just happy to see me?
that's exactly what it is. I don't have that. So I'm sure they know exactly what it is, and it's always spin. I mean, you make a slider spin more quickly, it's going to break sharper. You get a lot of backspin on the four-seam fastball, it's going to have that little extra life to it. But I think what you're seeing is a guy that threw 42 and a third innings the last 2 years. Combined, 42 and a third innings combined the last 2 years. Now he's going into 130-something along those lines. You're going to see natural fatigue. Best thing that happened, and I'm sure this is going to be a selling point for Scott Boras, is that they took a clean MRI. Nothing unusual in the MRI, which means that there's no permanent damage, and I think that's going to be a huge selling point for him because we saw what he could do when he's healthy. This was the best part for Carlos Rodon and the White Sox as an ancillary beneficiary of that. Carlos finally saw what he could do over a prolonged period of time when he was entirely healthy. He had never been entirely healthy for a long period of time. It's just one of those things. His body wasn't allowing it. So that part of it is a really good thing for him, and I think he comes into this game with as much confidence as he could possibly have. Pitchers will adjust to what they have on a daily basis. Carlos is no exception, and we'll just have to see how it works out. He's facing a very good baseball team, but the Sox are an excellent team at home. We pretty much saw what happened last time when they fell behind 5-1. There's no quit in this team. I'm not going to tell you they're going to win two games. I'm not going to tell you they're going to win today, but I will tell you that it won't be for lack of effort, and it won't be for lack of desire to come back and to bear down in all these situations that come up. I love their chances at home. I like their chances last time. I talked about that. I thought that not knowing how Cease would fare, but I just thought the ball club would hit the ball. They didn't hit it very much. But I think you saw in a couple different instances, when you looked at the way the game was played between the Dodgers and the Giants, you could see how defense can turn around a game. Now, quite obviously, the Sox don't have that kind of defense, but they're capable of playing a clean game. They play a clean game today, and they're going to beat the Astros. There's one other thing. I promised some of the people who follow me on Twitter that I would have a game plan designed against McCullers, and I've seen him a number of times, and boy, he's a really good pitcher. But when you're facing a guy that's that good, you have to take a side of the plate away from him. His strong side is the glove side. He loves to throw the ball away from the right-hand hitters into the left-hand hitters with both that fastball and slider. You cannot cover both sides of the plate against a guy with this kind of stuff. So for me, early, you try to maximize what he does best and work that against him, and that is look for the ball consistently middle away. I know it's one thing, it's real easy to say don't swing at the slider, but the slider looks like a fastball. It looks like a strike, and then it disappears. But if you're looking middle out, you're trying to take away his strength. The right-hand hitters are trying to go to right field with it. Do it as much as possible. Force him to go someplace where he's not comfortable, and that's throwing the ball in. If the boys early in the ball game will hit the ball the opposite way, and for left-handers, maybe open up a touch, maybe move off the plate a half an inch or so. Look for that ball inside because that's where he's going to stay. He's not quite as comfortable on the arm side. Make him beat the right-handers inside when he eventually goes there, and make him beat the left-handers away when he eventually goes there. But I think early, I think number one, you also have to attack the fastball. You cannot allow him to get in situations, especially with right-hand hitters, where he can throw you those sliders. He's very good at it. The Sox have not hit him. But I know he had one good ball game in our ballpark. He's going to have another one today. And I think there'll be a different game plan. One of the ways I always do it is you go after what he does best. You try to force him into what he does poorly, and hopefully you can beat him that way. And I wouldn't go deep in the counts with him because his stuff can be really good at the tail end of an at-bat. I would jump on pitches early, which plays right into what the Sox do well. But you have to limit the at-bats like we see occasionally with Aloy swinging at sliders that are 2 feet outside. I mean, it looks like he makes a determination to swing at a pitch before it's thrown, and those are the pitches you have to just let go if you can. And again, just keep looking middle away. If you're looking middle away, you're going to see that slider all the way when it leaves his hand.
Yes, and I will happily present Tim Anderson's career versus the slider and how he's improved and how he's hit opposite home runs to right field this season. It's been very enjoyable to watch, Stoney. I also want to ask you about how the team is using Michael Kopech. And I was very surprised to not see him used on Friday, especially with the 1-2 punch of Giolito against Framber Valdez. And to hear Tony say to Tom Verducci, people are available, but then we also heard that his availability won't be the case. What are your thoughts on just how he's been used? It's what we talked about all season, and I felt like it was leading up to this point. I still don't quite understand what the idea is.
Well, one of the things that I would say, let's say that I was trying to game plan against you. Let's say, Layla, that you're Dusty and I'm Tony. Am I going to tell you that he's available? Why would I tell you that? I wouldn't tell you that. If he was available and I knew I could use him, I'm not going to tell you he's available. Maybe you game plan differently. Maybe you got a dead fastball hitter that you would normally be saving for Kopech, but instead you put him in because you know Kopech's not available. That's one thing. I don't know if he's available. I think the only guy that knows is Tony. And again, why would he give anybody an advantage? Tony's not like that anyway. But I think he's also thinking ahead about what he might do. Certainly in game five, and I think, again, he starts Giolito there. But why he is using Kopech the way he's using it, one of the things is you're getting a guy who's been a first-time reliever. I think you saw in the ballgame when he did come in what happens a lot of times with Michael Kopech. Michael is used to throwing the ball pretty much as hard as he can. When there's a little extra life on it, it works really well. But throwing the ball as hard as you can takes away that little finesse that you really need to just throw it on the outside corner, the inside corner, to be able to paint the four quadrants, to be able to change eye levels. You go in with the high fastball, then you go with the low fastball. That's called pitching. This is what the avocation is. It's called pitching, not throwing. At this point, Michael has a little thrower in him, which means when that fastball is not as lively one day as the next, he will give up a couple of home runs like he did last time out. It was not a great performance by Michael. He threw the ball at times pretty well. But when he decides to just throw it and it doesn't go exactly where he wants to, it's infinitely hittable at 98 or 99 if it's straight. And on those days when there isn't the extra life, it is pretty straight. So I think Tony's got a real good feel for the bullpen. I think he understands something else. This Houston team kills fastballs. It's as simple as that. They murder fastballs. And so when you have a guy like Ryan Tepera who comes out and can get his slider over the plate, he probably is more effective. He has more experience. He's been a reliever. He's a guy that you can probably go to, and that's why I think the Sox have a big advantage with the rainout. Because, yes, it gives both teams a chance to regroup, but what it also does is it gives the A-list bullpen guys for the Sox a chance to come back with another day of rest. We have seen the A-list bullpen guys for the Sox when they are throwing it well, like Bummer threw it, like Tepera threw it, like Kimbrel for the one hitter threw it, and Hendricks threw it. When these guys are throwing it well, there's not a whole lot of people can hit him. You give them an extra day, it becomes an advantage to the team with the best bullpen. The Sox have a better bullpen than Houston. They don't have a lot of things better than Houston, but they have a better bullpen, especially back end.
Agreed.
And so with that said, you like the extra day. And I particularly like the fact, and again, I don't know if they're going to beat McCullers. I would much rather face him at our ballpark than in theirs. I mean, that's just the way it is. You're going to face him anyway. You might as well face him today and face him where our guys are comfortable hitting. That way, if we can get by him somehow today, we don't have to worry about it in Game 5. And I welcome Framber Valdez in Game 5 if they go to him.
Steve Stone, that's it's all great stuff. I know there's a lot of White Sox fans on tenterhooks right now, but nothing wrong with getting a scouting report from a guy who's been there before. Thanks, Steve.
Okay, take care and see you later and have a very good show.
Happy playoffs, Stoney. Thank you.
That is Steve Stone. And that was there was a lot of content in there. There's a lot of pitching porn in there, and I've got no problem with that. Next up, more baseball talk with Craig Calcaterra. He will talk playoffs. He will talk Tampa Bay Rays schadenfreude. He will talk a little bit about what Ryan Tepera said about the Astros and all of that next on The Score.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station. MLB analyst Craig Calcaterra, author of the Cup of Coffee newsletter.
Major League Baseball isn't interested in appealing to the greatest number of fans anymore. They're interested in the greatest amount of revenue. And all of these games, broadcasts, are sold already. They got the money. Fox or TBS or themselves, in the case of MLB Network or whatever, has already paid them for them. And they paid them based on certain times and whatever. And Major League Baseball just doesn't really seem to care that, you know, the third largest city in the country isn't able to watch a game during primetime, and it really stinks.
Craig Calcaterra with Bernstein and Rahimi on 670 The Score.
Let's talk some baseball with Craig Calcaterra, shall we? He is on Twitter at Craig Calcaterra. He is the writer of the Cup of Coffee newsletter, which I will say this before. If you are not doing that, reading that to start your baseball day each day, you are missing out, and you are not as informed or entertained as the rest of the baseball world. He joins us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And you should also check out Twitch as well, because, I mean, you should be doing that in general, just because it's fun and exciting and interesting. But you also can see the handsome face of Craig Calcaterra at twitch.tv/Chicago670TheScore. Hey, Craig, how are you?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, and I was thinking about you as the NFL news has been breaking regarding both John Gruden and Urban Meyer. All roads lead back to Ohio. And I don't know what it says, but like that's the last refuge of a scoundrel. We used to say like what they do is you open a ministry and that's kind of what you do. But it's Ohio political office. I think the resuscitation of John Gruden and maybe Urban Meyer at some point, that they're going to both be the representative senators or governor and lieutenant governor of your fine state.
They actually, despite all of their issues right now, they would probably be massive improvements over who is actually running for Senate here. So, and that says nothing good about Gruden or Meyer, to tell you all.
I think East Texas high school football coach might also be one of the of the occupations.
It's just really bleak in Ohio right now. I mean, it's always bleak in Ohio, but it's particularly bleak in Ohio right now.
White Sox are getting ready to go. They have made the decision to put Carlos Rodon on the mound, and we've been talking back and forth about a Carlos Rodon in this particular state of decay, or a healthy, as far as we know, Lance Lynn, and the White Sox are gonna hope they can get something out of him. I guess I'm generally not as optimistic by nature as maybe Tony La Russa and Carlos Rodon are. I'm just I'm not sure. They admit they don't know what they're going to get. What do you think they've got?
I don't think they know what they're getting either. I mean, the thing is, Lynn did get lit up by the Astros. So full power Lynn, who the Astros seem to have his number, doesn't seem particularly rosy either. I don't know that the decision is as big a deal, though, as we're making it out to be, because with the off day, with the fact that everybody's pretty rested, the minute you think that Rodon's going to get hit, you either go to Lynn if you feel comfortable taking him out of the, you know, using him out of the bullpen. But you've got, you know, four or five guys in the bullpen right now. I mean, Bummer, Kimbrel, Hendricks, our friend Tapera is there too. I'm sure the Houston fans would love to see him right now. But you've got a lot of options, especially with the rain out, that I don't think it's as high a leverage situation as you think. And if for some reason Rodon has it, you know, hey, great. You're in good shape, and you've got a fully rested Lance Lynn for a potential deciding game.
Well, you mentioned Ryan Tapera, and those comments, as they tend to do, permeated throughout baseball. It's something that people are always going to discuss. I thought it was really interesting what Jerry Blevins had to say, too, when he said, this is what happens when teams do this. There's always going to be a seed of doubt there. Just that acknowledgement and understanding from other players that this is still a thing people are concerned about. What was your take on it?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, do I think Tapera saying that when he said it and giving bulletin board material is the best idea ever? Probably not, but I think bulletin board material is overrated, particularly in baseball. At the same time, yeah, I mean, look, you nothing happened to the Astros, at least certainly anybody who's left there. Two people got punished. One of them is the manager of the Detroit Tigers right now. The other guy is just disgraced and out in the world. But none of the players got punished. The worst thing that could possibly happen to them is people talking smack about them. But you know what? It's well-earned smack. You cheat, you're going to have that hang over you forever. Barry Bonds can't go out in public for the rest of his life without someone yelling, hey, steroid guy, or something at him. That's just part of the deal. You cheat, especially if you're not punished, you're going to have that hurled at you once in a while. And you know what? You can't act too whiny about it. I mean, I think Dusty Baker handled it better than anybody with his, you know, sort of deflecting who's Ryan Tapera comment. That's actually pretty good. But you know, no one's going to cry for the Astros if someone says that about them, and nor should they.
How much do you allow yourself to enjoy the Tampa Bay Rays losing?
A fair amount. Like I wrote this morning, there's this thing out there right now. There's two ways to look at it. There's one way to say, well, the Rays are a big fraud. They're nowhere near as good as they think they are. Well, I don't think that's true. The Rays are a very good team. They've won more games in the American League than almost anybody the last couple, 3 years, I believe. They certainly were the best team in the American League all season. They're a good team. The postseason is nothing but a tournament, and best of five is not really a decider of who's a fraud and who's actually really good. It just tells you who's playing better right now. At the same time, I'm not a big fan of how the Rays, we've discussed this before, I don't like how the Rays go about their business. I don't like the fact that the minute anyone gets expensive or the minute fans start to take a shine to somebody, they send them off. I don't like the fact that they're playing this Montreal-St. Pete game. I think just from a business perspective and a team-building perspective, they're pretty off-putting. And so for that reason, I'm happy to not see the Rays advance.
What do you think worked for the Red Sox so well? Hitting, the obvious answer, but you know, it wasn't just that. Their offense really did turn up, though, in the last three games.
Yeah, it's a talented offense, and all year they have either had injuries or they've had inconsistency or something, and they're putting it together right now. I saw a lot of people saying right after that game ended last night, why did you pitch to Enrique Hernandez? Why didn't you put him on first base? You know, set up the double play. And yeah, I guess strategically that's a defensible position. But Rafael Devers is sitting on deck, and he had already hit a 3-home run and went 3-for-4 in the game. There's really no safe haven there. So the Red Sox look pretty scary right now. There are a lot of guys in that lineup that can hurt you.
What's happening with the future of Aaron Boone and the Yankees? And how do you think, usually Yankees manager is something different than like replacement level average team manager just because of what you're asked to deal with there. Do you think he's well regarded in general as either a manager of people, motivator, tactician, however we look at these managerial criteria? How good is he at it? And do you think if, in fact, the Yankees decided to move on, somebody would come in and snap him right up?
No, I think he's actually thought of very well outside of the people who, I am one of them, by the way, who while watching a game, second guesses managerial choices. I think Aaron Boone makes a lot of questionable choices about how long he leaves pitchers in, about, you know, lineups that he makes, things like that, things that fans get sort of animated about. I also think that over the course of 162 games and over the course of several years, excuse me, that stuff sort of washes out. And Boone has survived that. But what he does very well, what he does very well in New York is deal with the press, deal with the pressure, deal with the expectations of a lot of people in that front office who ask a lot of things. I think that if you move on from Boone, and some people are talking about it, that you have a huge risk of actually a downgrade. You have someone that has to have the learning curve of being the Yankees manager, which is a lot harder a job than managing a lot of other teams. And so I think the comfort level that Boone gives and the confidence that the management team has in him is going to keep him in that job, even if he's not very exciting, even if he's not the kind of manager that certain fans think is going to take the Yankees to the next level. I think the Yankees' problems are far bigger than Aaron Boone. I think they're structural. I think they're dealing with roster construction and player development and things like that.
Atlanta has a chance to clinch today. We see Charlie Morton on the mound again for them. That was the one game the Brewers won in the first game of the series. I thought they did a nice job trying to just wear him down. What do you think of the series so far, and what do you think we'll see today?
I sure would like to see someone score a run. I mean, there are a few runs, but the offense has been definitely at a premium in the series. The Brewers right now look terrible. This is the worst they've looked all year, which is saying something because they've looked like a pretty good team all year, and then all of a sudden they just go silent as soon as the postseason rolls around. That's not a great thing. I think Charlie Morton actually is a pretty fine choice for the Braves, rolling him out there. I think they've got enough guys who have been in hitting pretty well right now to where they're going to take advantage of whoever Milwaukee is throwing out there. I don't even know who they're starting right now. It was undecided last night when I checked, but it's just a very weird time and a very unfortunate time for the Brewers to go cold.
I'm glad you pointed out the ugliness in Atlanta regarding the use of the tomahawk chop when they did and how they did. It was really just gross.
Yeah. So the thing is, I've been not a fan of the tomahawk chop for years. I am traditionally a Braves fan. I've been a Braves fan for like 36 years. As soon as the chop started in the 90s, it started to bother me. It still bothers me. But what really takes it to the next level was in 2019 in the playoffs, when a pitcher for the Cardinals with a Native American heritage, Helsey, talked about how that was offensive to him. The Braves actually stopped and they said, you know what, he's right. And they didn't play it while he was in the game. And that's a very small thing to do. But what it is an acknowledgement that it is offensive to somebody. Well, yesterday in the game, Hauser, the reliever for the Brewers, came in. He is a member of the Cherokee Nation. He was in trouble. He had two men on. The pitching coach came to the mound, and then all of a sudden the drum beats start, the scoreboard starts showing the tomahawk chop, and the fans start doing it again. It's as if they didn't listen to themselves for what they decided in 2019. They don't care. It doesn't matter. They don't want to get the political blowback that they got back in 2019 for doing it from certain people. And I just think it's an ugly, ugly thing, and I wish that the Braves were better than that. Unfortunately, they're not.
You talk about the lack of offense in the National League, and we haven't discussed the barn burner between the Giants and Dodgers, that 1-0 8-hit total game. What are your takeaways from that series so far?
I mean, last night's game, the only thing you could take away was like a Wrigley game in April or something. The wind blowing in from the outfield was incredible. There were like three or four balls that would have been home runs based on exit velocity and launch angle and all that all the time, including that Gavin Lux shot that ended the game. Everybody in the ballpark thought that was a home run, but it wasn't. I don't know that you could have any takeaways other than Max Scherzer gives up one dinger and to a guy who's been kind of a bench player in Evan Longoria, and you just lose the game. It's just such good teams. Both of those teams are so good. The Giants have been getting contributions from everybody all year, and it's continuing in this postseason. The Dodgers at their top end are the most talented team in baseball. You saw that with Max Scherzer. You might see it again today with Walker Buehler. it's just mano a mano, and the depth for the Giants is sort of winning out. Plus, I hate to say this, but just luck.
Greg Calcaterra, thank you, and here's hoping the White Sox are still viable the next time we speak.
Thanks for talking.
Thanks, Greg.
That's Greg Calcaterra. We have the Midday Midway coming up next. There are issues. If you are a fan of fast food fish, there is an issue in our supply chain, and I learned a bunch of things. Think before we break, what do you think your fast food fish, what fish do you think it actually is?
Oh, no, not this game again. Really?
No, it's real. It's not a question of the provenance or anything like that. It is definitely a real fish. I genuinely didn't know. I didn't know what fish it is, but it is a fish. And now there's a problem with it.
I've kept track of this for some reason because I have odd reading tendencies. And speaking of odd reading tendencies, did anybody read the quotes about Machine Gun Kelly and Megan Fox? I try to stay away from entertainment news here, but it's worth laughing at. Yeah, just go with me on this one.
This is Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago Sports Station.
The first half or the second half, you know, it's they're two equal times.
Now, Midway.
The Midday Midway.
One, two.
Midway, the most important of the year.
Three, four.
The most exciting thing on the Midway.
Five, six, seven, eight.
Our objective is Midway.
9, 10.
You guys gotta meet me halfway out there.
So real, you can almost feel it.
The Midday Midway with Bernstein and Rahimi. Middays 9 a.m. to noon on The Score.
Busy talked about the news that broke quickly last night regarding John Gruden and his forced resignation from the Raiders and from pretty much everything. Started there, went to baseball, talked to Steve Stone, talked to Craig Calcaterra. We should also bring you the news that Kyrie Irving will not play or practice with the Brooklyn Nets due to his vaccination status. And they have mentioned, the statement said, Kyrie has made a personal choice. We respect his individual right to choose. The choice restricts his ability to be a full-time member of the team. We will not permit any member of our team to participate with part-time availability. And that's that. So we'll see if the Players Association does anything, but that is the latest. They said, you've made your choice, and we've made ours.
This deserves not a lot of time, but it does deserve me reading this quote to you. Megan Fox talking about Machine Gun Kelly to British GQ. I just remember this tall, blonde, ghostly creature. And I looked up and I was like, you smell like weed. He looked down at me and he was like, I am weed. Then I swear to God, he disappeared like a ninja in a smoke bomb. Because you were high!
What? What the hell is that?
I think it's a high school love story.
Yeah, exactly.
What were you going to say, Mike?
Yeah, I said just at that moment they fell in love.
Like, are you kidding? You act like you two are the only people who've gotten together because you both like weed? This is not an atypical story, Megan Kelly, and Megan Fox and Machine Gun Kelly. I am entertained by all of their
Megan Kelly's involved in this. Now you got a thing. Now we got a story.
Oh, God, I forgot about her. She also said, this is what Machine Gun Kelly said to British GQ. It's just, like, really entertaining. It was Twitter fodder, and I woke up to the quote this morning. I was like, well, this is getting on the show. He said, even our first kiss, she wouldn't kiss me. We just put our lips right in front of each other and breathed each other's breath. And then she just left. Again, because you're probably smoking and high.
Why does it have to be so weird?
Yeah, stop being weird.
I mean, I don't know. She's been through a junk marriage and she wasn't very happy about it. I don't blame her at all. It didn't sound very fun. So I appreciate her like being happy and two people are in love and that's always a good thing. But something about it just... when you have the quotes like these, it's just an entertaining read. Like, you two, you already lasered it, you're done with it.
And what is he's a singer, rapper, dancer?
Yeah, okay. He's a singer.
Okay.
And then he also says, because you've been around the world and you've experienced so much blank, you think you know everything. And then you are in the arms of your destiny and realize, I don't know anything yet.
Okay.
I mean... circuitous paths to get to the same discussion, but sure. Or you could say you two both smoked a lot, and instead of kissing, you just transferred smoke, and then you know you really like her. But aw, that's cute. Yay for love, I guess.
A customs dispute at the U.S.-Canada border is threatening America's supply of a key fish used for popular products such
as cod.
It is not. popular products such as fish sticks and fast food sandwiches. It's a relative of cod. The Alaska pollock has a complicated supply chain.
Oh, I liked him when he hit for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
AJ Pollock. After being caught as part of the largest commercial fishery in the U.S., the fish are transported by ship to New Brunswick, Canada, near the border with Maine. They are then loaded onto rail cars for a trip of 100 feet of track in Canada.
100 feet.
100 feet, not 100 miles. 100 feet of track before being put on trucks and crossing the border into the U.S. U.S. Customs and Border Protection has alleged that shippers are violating the Jones Act, which requires that goods shipped between U.S. ports be transported on U.S.-owned ships. The agency has assessed more than $350 million in penalties to the shippers. Two of the shipping companies have sued in federal court to stop the enforcement, which they characterize as heavy-handed, unexpected, and unfair. Over 100 feet of track. The dispute left 26 million pounds of fish in cold storage in Canada until a federal court judge issued an injunction Sunday to let the seafood be shipped into the U.S. Members of the industry say they're concerned about permanent disruption to the seafood supply chain if the disagreement continues.
Yeah.
And when you say, okay, well, what's the big deal? Well, it's huge because you're talking about all of the fast food, McDonald's Filet-O-Fish, Arby's Classic Fish Sandwich, McDonald's Fish McBites, Long John Silver's Fish Taco, Burger King's Big Fish, Captain D's Seafood Kitchen, Bird's Eye Fish Fingers, and it is the premier raw material for surimi or imitation crab meat, crab stick.
So, imitation crab is fish?
So this, it's this. It is.
I was not aware of this.
Yeah, it's basically painted Alaskan pollock.
So it's painted?
Yeah, you think it's a real color?
I don't know. I'm not a big, like, California roll person.
California roll should be real crab.
Yeah.
Grocery store California roll is not, but it's supposed to be king crab in your California roll.
Well, at least
it's
really fish, but sounds like a terrible job, having to paint all of those. Ugh.
Well, it's not like, it's like watercolors. I mean, they just get
artificial.
That is
what I pictured when you said that.
People like holding a palette
and
hand just painting the little.
Yes.
Okay.
Like, this sounds tedious
well,
as hell.
I digress. I was picking up groceries and my.
I am groceries.
My Jewel was doing, so they were relaunching their fish department. So they had like this shark on ice. And so I took a picture of it and I sent it to the family. And I was buying salmon because I was making the salmon salad that everybody likes. And Beth looked at the tag and she said, because that salmon says color added.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah.
That's common.
But I had to, I said, honey, it's color added to their feed. They're not like painting the fish with color. I said, don't worry about it. The color that they add to their feed is the exact same chemical that is in the shrimp that they eat in the wild that makes their flesh that color anyway.
New job, fish painter.
Or fish explainer. It's like punt observer or punt berserker. But I said, no worries. When they say farmed salmon color added. Oh my God. No, they're not injecting color into the, they're just, what they feed them has the exact same natural chemical that occurs in the shrimp that turns them that color. That's all.
This is getting fired up on Twitch.
Yeah,
and
the lesson.
Everybody.
What? How so?
Yeah, imitation crab is perfectly acceptable for sushi. Okay, yes, I agree with that. I've definitely had I've enjoyed a Jewel California roll or two or three. I just hadn't really given it a lot of thought, which is probably a bad thing. Also, every time we laugh about Grant and the punt return, I flip back to my notes in my notebook and it says Grant. Period. All caps. Just kneel.
No. He's just, no.
Yes, he would have gotten three more yards.
He's coming out. He must be witness. Somebody compared him to Leroy Jenkins.
We got a lot of that yesterday.
Yeah. God!
It's the confidence, people. It's just the confidence.
That's the midday midway. And that leads us to our Tuesday quarterback who has a lot of thoughts on some stuff happening around football. Sage Rosenfeld's next on The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.